Blog Talk Radio.
A hypothetical question.
Oh dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're going to like a real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
Oh gosh, because you know the position that would put me in. You know, we have language in the prospectus.
Yeah, I know that the bankers can change their mind, and I know what is at stake. You know, the only couple I knew that both Kennedy and LBJ wanted to socialize with was you and your husband, and you owned the damn paper. But that's the way things worked. Politicians and the press, they trusted each other so they could go to the same dinner party and drink cocktails and tell jokes while there was a war raging in Vietnam.
I don't know what we're talking about. I'm not protecting Lyndon.
No, you got his former Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, the man who commissioned this study. He's
I'm
one of about a dozen party
him.
Guests
I'm not
out on your
any
patio.
Of them. I'm protecting the paper.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson, and Merry Christmas Eve, everybody. Yes, it is the show before Christmas, and I usually take this week off, but why not? I didn't do a show after the Star Wars show last week because I figured, was there really anything else anybody wanted to talk about last week other than Star Wars? Well, maybe, but I didn't want to talk about anything else other than Star Wars, so I didn't do a second show last week, so I will do an extra one this week, and then next week will be my top 10 of the year episode, so get ready for that. Like I do most years, I will do that show, and usually the next day is when I will post my top 20. That might be a little bit different this year. The timing may be a little bit different this year, but I will definitely have the top 20 right around the same time as I do the top 10 broadcast. So I will keep you up to date on that on the Punch Drunk Critics Facebook page and on the Cinema Royale Facebook page. But let's not worry about that right now. Let's talk about what's going on today's show. And we're doing two movies on today's show. Well, two. We'll say three. First of all, RogerEbert.com, Susan Wolzena, one of my dear friends here in D.C., will be joining me to talk about The Post, because I feel like we have to talk about The Post. Otherwise, they'll shoot us or something, because it's about the Washington Post. So we kind of have to do it. So we'll talk about The Post. Which is Steven Spielberg's film starring Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. Fantastic ensemble. Talking about the release of the Pentagon Papers. Is this Spielberg's second movie this year? Spielberg is moving faster than ever lately. It's like him and Ridley Scott. They're just blazing through these movies as they get older. It's crazy. And we'll also talk about Pitch Perfect 3, which is... a sequel to The Post. No, it's not. They have nothing in common. But we'll talk about that one. It's the end of the franchise, I think, I hope. And that's not a commentary on this particular film. I just kind of want these movies to just go away now. there's been three of them. That's enough. I don't want us to get up to like Pitch Perfect 8 with like whole new cast and all that kind of stuff. I don't want that. I want them to go out and, you know, they've had their third movie and that should be enough. So we'll talk about that as well with Susan. And then later on, I am going to talk about Bright, Netflix's first blockbuster, the $90 million cop thriller. fantasy cop story, really, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton. That's the movie with where humans live alongside orcs and elves and fairies, and there's all types of weird stuff going on there. But it's been a subject of a lot of controversy already, so I want to kind of get into that a little bit. And at the same time, talk about some of the reactions to Star Wars: The Last Jedi, because I just find it funny. I'm blown away by the number of people who are dismayed at this movie because of the changes it makes. So I'm going to put those two movies together and just talk about the reactions to both, because I found them both rather funny. But anyway, let's get going here. Before I bring in Susan, I want to thank everybody who's been checking out Critical, the Movie Critics Network, over on Blog Talk Radio, and of course on our Facebook page. We continue to grow. We got a bunch of great shows. Of course, last week was all Star Wars. This week it's about wrapping up the year. So you got a lot of end of the year shows going on right now. I know Joanna Langfield just posted her top 10 of the year, which I think she did in a minute, like she almost always does, which is crazy to me. So she has hers. I think there's some other shows that are doing theirs this year, this week as well. So go and check those out. All right, now let's bring in Susan, because she's been waiting patiently. I told her to call in at 11. I should have told her to call in at like 11:05. How you doing, Susan?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. It's
you
good
went
to have
to
you
Target
on.
Yesterday. So
I did go to Target yesterday.
I was worried
yesterday.
About you.
I know. It was ugly. and I went to...
I went to a Wegmans, and that was ugly, too. But I got out with just a little residue on me, so it's okay.
Well, I went to, believe it or not, after I left Target, I went to Walmart later that night. I know. I was a glutton for punishment all yesterday.
For punishment. All right.
I
well,
was.
Hopefully
I had
you came away with it was worthwhile for you. Came away with whatever you needed. So.
I got everything I needed at Target, but I had to go grocery shopping, so I went to Walmart.
Yeah. Okay.
Neither one of them was a pleasant experience. Trust me. But anyway, let's talk about. Well, first of all, how are you doing? You know, this is Susan. For those who don't know, Susan Wilzenis from RogerEbert.com. You also write for USA Today. A veteran of the industry is how
people still want me to do what I love, which is, pontificate about movies. It's amazing.
Right.
So, and, you people like you, you keep me in the loop when I'm not. So.
I noticed though, those of us who have been doing this for a really long time, I look at you and I look at Arch Campbell, and I always laugh at the movies that you choose to like pretend don't exist, or
that's unfair, because I have told your friend Tim I'm a movie mercenary now. If I get paid for it, I go to it, no matter how awful, no matter how genius, I do it. And when I have time, I catch up when I can. And, I didn't write about Dunkirk, but I went to that, and I went to the full experience at the Smithsonian. I am, a cinephile, but, again, I use my time well to help pay for my dog's, medical emergencies and things. I have my priorities.
I understand, and trust me, I get it. I understand completely. There are times where I get paid to see certain things, and I will go see them even if I don't really want to. So I get it. I totally understand.
But I did, for my soul's benefit, to keep me honest, I did see two smaller films from this year, Columbus and Personal Shopper.
You know what? Before we get into the post, I really want to get your opinion on Columbus, because I know I told you that it was going to be very, very high in my top 10. Don't tell them exactly what I told you, because I'm going to reveal that on the show next week. But I absolutely adore that movie. I had Haley Lou Richardson as my favorite female performance of the year. I love her so much in that film.
Yeah.
What did you think of it, though?
Well, it's not Star Wars, but...
No, it is
a
complete opposite.
To it, but it made me think about things like, the choices people made, your connections to family, what inspires you outside of your own head, like architecture or, you know, whatever. And, you know, dealing with the legacy of your family, dealing with your own issues. I mean, I loved her character, too, because I think, you know, there are a lot of, it wasn't exactly a coming-of-age story, but she's at a point in her life, she has to live her own life. She can't feel guilty for having to take care of her drug addict mother and all these things. And she needs, she has an opportunity, and that's, you know, the big question, whether she'll go and move away from this kind of provincial town in a way and really do what she's meant to do. And, I, you know, I'm a girl still at heart. So I like that, you know, and I just liked her. I liked her look. I like her acting. I, you know, it was a different kind of young girl persona that I appreciated because she seemed rather mature and she had to be because she kind of raised herself. And, but at a certain point, you have to do that in your life. You can't live for others. And I liked the relationship she had with John Cho.
Fantastic.
No, I always think they both have come a long way from, you know, Bill and Ted, or not Bill and Ted, the other one.
No, Harold and Kumar. Harold and Kumar. He's come a really long way.
But they are Bill and Ted. They just were more interesting Bill and Ted. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that movie reminded me, in terms of the, like some of the themes that she is going through, reminded me a lot of kind of Greta Gerwig's perspective on Lady Bird, which is I like the fact they were two, that she was a character.
Very
who,
different
she,
energies in both, and that's fine.
Yes.
You know, but
yes. But
I
they're
like
both
that,
people who are in there who are, they're not hating their small towns, or at least in Greta Gerwig, in Lady Bird's case, you know, she seems like she's ready to get out of
there.
She's
much more immature too. She's old. I mean, the character in Columbus is older. So.
Definitely more immature in Lady Bird, but you both come away feeling like both characters love their hometowns, you know, and I really like that aspect of it, you know, because a lot of movies you're like, oh,
they
I
both
can't wait,
have
I can't
to leave.
Wait to get away from here. I hate this place. I can't wait to get away. These movies are saying something different, so I kind of like that.
Yeah. No, that's a good comparison, the two of them. So, but I like both of them very much. Maybe I like humor, and I grew up Catholic, so her eating the communion wafers, Lady Bird, put it over the edge. That made me very happy to see. Anyway,
all right.
Are we going to talk about the good one or the bad one first?
Let's talk about. Well, we're going to talk about The Post first. So I guess I'm assuming that's the one you think is the good one.
I do. I do indeed.
Yes, The Post, which I'm still salty that we didn't get our screening at the same time as New York.
By
that. Although I see that Tom Hanks refused to show it at the White House, which makes me happy. So.
But they came to Washington anyway and got a whole lot of coverage. Where else in The Post? So it worked for them with that. So
So this is Steven Spielberg's film about the Washington Post and their decision to release the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg's Pentagon Papers. And the ensemble is fantastic for this. Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, Carrie Coon, who I love, Tracy Letts, who I feel like has been everywhere this year. I feel like I've seen him in like a million movies this year. He's been super.
Three, which you can multiply if you want, but three.
It feels like a lot for him. Like I feel like I didn't see him in a lot of movies before. I mean, maybe he was. Maybe I was just missing them. But
well,
I feel like I've seen
him
a lot.
Busy writing plays and stuff, right? So.
Yes. Yeah. He'll play it.
He's got two jobs.
Right.
But he is
ever since he was in Indignation last year, and he had that fantastic scene in Indignation, it's like all of a sudden I'm seeing Tracy Letts everywhere. So,
well,
I mean,
who didn't see Indignation? That's one I missed.
Oh, you definitely need to catch up with Indignation if you didn't.
No, I know it's a good one. I know. Yeah. It's just my life is my life. I have to choose wisely. So
I know. I'm just talking
with
about
the
when
time
you're
I have
at home
left.
And you're like. Yeah, I wasn't trying to go there.
All right, let's talk about the post.
What are your thoughts on The Post?
All right, well, now, again, my age comes into play. I started to work at newspapers in the late 70s, okay? And I was an editor back then. And so One thing I did enjoy that maybe other people wouldn't so much is seeing journalism as it was done old school, which meant linotype machines and the press and ink and, you know, compositors and press people. And my favorite thing were these little vacuum tubes we used to send the layouts to the composing room. And it was just such a weird device, but it worked because then you didn't have to run all over the building to give people stuff to, you know, work on. So it was great. And then there's a scene, I was a copy editor, so the minute they give a story to one of the copy editors to edit really quick, the person, you see them, you don't see the person, but you see them cross out the first five lines or words of the lead, which is, you know, very copy editor-ish. I love that. They didn't even read them. They just got rid of them. So.
Yeah, that's the
but
thing,
that's a very small part for me, which made this film, you know, in my mind, a little more special. But what is interesting to me, like, I, you know, this is the first time Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks have worked together.
Which is crazy.
It's sort of interesting, their chemistry, because there's a lot of tension between them because, you know, as you know, Meryl Streep's Catherine Graham, she's a woman in a man's world. She's been forced into keeping her family legacy alive as, you know, one of the rare female publishers for a big city newspaper, although at this point the Post wasn't the Post yet, and that Watergate, that Pentagon Papers, all that. But to me, I got, as much as this is a wonderful case for the First Amendment, which we really need right now, and why it's important to keep somebody, you know, watching what the government is doing, and in this case, you know, it was a matter of life or death because they extended the Vietnam War and definitely knowing that they would never, ever win whatever there was to win from that. But I think I liked, you know, also is a time of feminist leanings coming to the forefront. And I think Meryl Streep does a wonderful job in many ways of showing how this character learned to finesse dealing with a whole lot of, you know, white middle-aged guys in suits judging her and thinking they know better. And that includes Ben Bradley, because there was this one scene very early on, and they're talking about covering one of the Nixon daughter's weddings and how she doesn't like the snideness of how they treat the daughters. Not, you know, because they're not Richard Nixon, they're his daughters. And he's, like, dismissing her. At one point, he says, "Catherine, her finger out of my eye." And at that point, they're at breakfast, eating, trying to deal with things newspaper-wise. But she has to turn her face away, and she does this little hum, which she's trying to swallow the words she wants to say because she has to negotiate with him all the time. So it's, I mean, I think every woman who's dealt with men who come on strong and think they know better, there are a point you have to rise to the occasion and kind of just take a breath and do it. And I just appreciated that little scene in the movie. And then, you know, it grows from there. That's just the first time because she's under pressure in many ways. She has a family array. She has to, you know, deal with the newspaper going public. And so how is that? You know, what they're going to do with the Pentagon Papers affects that. So, I mean, she's in a tight spot. And also at the end, I liked how Sarah Paulson is then Ben Bradley's then wife, telling him, you know, he's all upset because they're taking chance and have to rush through all this news coverage to get it in the paper. But she goes, you know, she's really on the line, you know, Catherine Graham, because she has all this coming down on her, and she had all these connections.
All the eyes are on her.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I actually liked about it, it's secretly a feminist movie. It does, you don't go into it expecting it to be that.
No.
You're kind of expecting it to be. At least I went into it expecting it to be about, you know, the investigation into the veracity of the
right. And I
the,
think a lot of people will think that because of all the president's men. Yeah.
Exactly. For exactly
and
that
it's
reason.
Not
and it's
at
really
all.
Not about that. Yeah, it's not about that at all. It's about the Post and their decision to even release them. But and I liked it because it really was showing kind of how how things are now. It's like the beginnings of how things are now. You talked about that scene in the beginning with them wanting to cover the Nixon wedding and the government basically being like, no, because we don't like your papers attitude. That's exactly how things are nowadays, where the government is asserting that kind of influence into the way, you know, they are covered. And it starts off with little things like that. You know, it's not something big. You start off with something that's seemingly inconsequential. Oh, it's just a wedding in the style section. Who cares?
Yeah.
But it grows from there. If you let it go from there, it only grows. And this is sort of the beginnings of that. So that was the stuff I was fascinated with. More so than anything else, was looking at that. And also, you know, Kat Graham and everything she had to deal with. It was funny how in the movie she was always in rooms full of men who were talking around her about her.
Right, exactly. But, you know, she knows that. I mean, she's a very smart woman, you know, and she knows what she has to do. And or, you know, she's not going to say, you know, oh, shut up now, it's my turn, or anything like that. She finds a way to deal with all this. And by the end, and I you probably aren't aware of this, but at the end of the movie, she's throwing a party for somebody who's retiring from the paper. I think it's from the paper. And, you know, she's wearing this gorgeous gossamer caftan. And there now have been actual think pieces about that caftan she wears, because all this time she's been wearing more business attire, right, what would be appropriate.
Right.
And now she's dragged into them rushing to print what they can from the Pentagon Papers and whether or not they're going to be stopped by, you know, the Supreme Court and all this other stuff. And, you know, are they risking their stock price and whatever? And she's wearing this very feminine caftan, and it becomes a sort of suit of armor for her. You know, she just goes to it, and she finally rises to the challenge of, you know, knowing what she has to do as a publisher and just put aside every other thing and just, you know, do what she has to do what newspapers do best, which is tell the truth and get it out there to the people who need to know. And
you know what that reminds me of, though? I mean, and this is maybe this is wrong of me to look at it this way, but it reminds me of a movie I think we've actually mentioned before in conversation, like Under the Tuscan Sun. It reminds me of Diane Lane's character, her hair all tight in a bun for an entire movie until
she
finally lets go, has sex with whoever the guy is she's with. And the next scene, her hair's down, flowing in the wind. And it's like, okay, we get it. She's free now. She's okay.
You know, there's been how many movies where the librarian shakes her hair and take off her glasses or something.
Yeah, exactly.
The sex bomb, you know, she's just been hiding. I mean, that's just like one of the oldest cliches in the book.
It definitely is.
But in this case, it means
I know it means a lot more here than it does in those movies. Trust me, I'm just saying.
But she's a woman, and she's doing something very important, and it doesn't matter how she looks. She's made this decision, and only she could have made it, and, you know, God bless her for it. So, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's just funny because it was such a weird choice of a wardrobe, but, you know, it meant something to at least a lot of female film critics. I'm just saying, you may have missed it.
I totally understand. As much as I enjoyed it, though, I do feel like, and this is classic Spielberg, you know, there's always like one emotional beat too many, or it's like one, he dials up he pulls the heartstrings like a little bit too tight sometimes. Yeah. And there are a couple scenes towards the end where I think he kind of jams in some of the feminism
the
a little bit. Yeah. Like a lot, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. And it's like, yeah, we got it. But here comes Spielberg with like one more for you anyway. And it's like, like my biggest problem with it. And maybe that's not all him. Maybe that's the screenplay by Josh Singer. And I forgot the woman's name who co-writes it with him.
Yeah.
But maybe it's more them, but it always seems to be in Spielberg movies. And I think that was the only thing that kind of took me out of it a little bit. Otherwise, I thoroughly enjoyed this kind of look at
a
side post. I didn't know that much about it.
All the President's Men. It's not a thriller like that of or Spotlight where you see them actually, you know, do the work, because these are people higher up we're dealing with more. This is but I have to say, you know, I like John Williams' score, because I'm like, I knew what was going to happen, right? But the score, somehow I go, why am I feeling a little edgy even though I know it? And it kind of came from his score, which, you know, isn't in your face. But there are two scenes that were silly, that they have these messengers taking things to the New York Times or something. And they, you know, run across. This happened twice. They're almost like struck by cars. Because and who would run across the street, even if you were in a hurry, without looking both ways in New York? I mean, I don't know, but you know, there are consequences. But I thought that was a little cornball. That's kind of stuck. But I mean, that's very small potatoes. But I like seeing Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep together. I hope Spielberg continues to make these kind of films, because I think now he's less into, you know, the sci-fi, E.T., you know, showing he can do old-fashioned style storytelling, but just doing it a little more down and dirty and just giving us these films, you know, every year if he can. So,
I mean it seems like he's...
What was his other Spielberg film?
He didn't do another one this year. I thought he did. He did the BFG last year. But I was thinking of the BFG was this year, but it was last year. But he seems to be doing one for the fans, one for me, sort of thing. Like he'll do the BFG, he'll do Bridge of Spies, you know, and then he'll do the BFG, and then he'll do The Post, and then his next one is Ready Player One, which is all sci-fi, all fantasy, basically a tribute to himself. You know, Ready Player One is full of nothing but Spielberg references from the 80s. So, I mean, it's like he's alternating, showing both sides. Yeah. I'm hoping I want the movies that are a bit smaller to do as well as the ones that are bigger. I was really disappointed in the fact that nobody saw the PFG, which I thought was really good. But, you know.
Well, I love Lincoln, and to me that was great in a lot of different ways. So, you know, I mean, he still has it. It's just, you know, he does have that fantasy thing, but I'm less interested in those now than I was back in the 80s or whatever when I saw them. So I think he does better with serious subjects, and we need serious subjects. God knows. I mean, we have enough fantasy running around the screen. So
I totally forgot about War Horse. That was only 6 years ago. I totally forgot about it. I forgot they directed it. But anyway. All right, let's take a quick break, and then you and I come back. We're going to talk about the good movie now. So, all right. We'll
How
be
long
right
is
back.
This break?
Like a minute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. We'll be right back.
As predicted, Gale, the Bellas are in over their heads, lost in a sea of semen.
Oh, indie girl, rock indie girl, show up the mix girl, bada bum bum, bounce sweetie girl, dance sweetie girl, get sweetie girl, bada bum bum.
Come on, come on, turn the radio on, it's Friday night and it won't be long, gotta do my hair, put my makeup on, it's
you.
We had the only dollar bill to have fun tonight.
I love cheap thrills.
All right, welcome back to the Royale. I'm here with Susan Wilzena of RogerEbert.com, and now she's going to sing her review of Pitch Perfect 3. Go ahead, Susan.
No, I don't think so.
What? I didn't say that was a prerequisite for coming on, that you had to sing the review.
If you sing first, I'll follow.
Nobody wants to hear that, trust
me.
I
only have auto-tune on my phone, all right? So, I don't think I'm at, you know, the really prepared to do what they do in this movie. So.
Well, Pitch Perfect 3 is apparently the last one of the franchise.
Well,
it brings back
everybody.
Yes. Okay, what?
There may be a Fat Amy movie. I'm just warning you.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of there possibly being a spin-off.
I think it's actually not doing badly. I think it made like $10 million on Friday or something. So
yeah, I haven't done. I'll do our usual box office breakdown at the end of the show. So I haven't looked at it yet. But Pitch Perfect 3. This is the third movie in the franchise. The first one was a huge hit. The second one was even bigger. The last movie was atrocious, in my opinion. It was almost unwatchable. It was so bad.
Yeah.
In fact, they did this kind of video recap of the first two movies to get you ready for this one, like the entire cast. And
yeah.
It was funny watching them go over the second movie because you could just look on their faces like, I can't believe this movie is crap. Like just seeing them go over the plot of it. It's like, none of this makes any sense at all. It's like... But I will say this movie.
What?
Even though I don't think it's great at all, it's better than the last one, and at least it seems to be a lot more self-aware than the last one was. I mean, it takes time to make fun of itself on a lot of occasions, which I think is always a good place to go for a franchise like this. I think it gets a little distracted from what made the first movie great, which is the camaraderie between the girls. And their desire to stay together after their college years are done. There's not enough music either. I think they needed more music. I mean, these are the things
that
people.
I thought there was way too much music. There isn't enough there.
I thought they could need it more, but go ahead.
Okay. I think the only thing I liked was the ending where, after all, whatever happens that we'll talk about soon, but, you know, they do this Ren or Anna Kendrick. She has a chance to go off on her own, but, of course, she can't do it. And she brings her fellow Bellas up, and they sing Freedom 90, George Michael. And it was fine. And also it was the end of the movie. So I was very happy to have my freedom to go live my life. But, no, any movie, okay, how desperate do you have to be to add – action movie elements that don't work at all
and
are ridiculous to the plot. And then to bring in John Lithgow, okay, who, you know, I don't object to normally, but in this he was like, where is Waldo, the Australian edition, as this gangster who's Fat Amy's father, and who, it just was ridiculous. You know,
why were there so many daddy issues amongst them? Because it wasn't just her. Aubrey, the character played by Anna Camp,
right.
Her character, she's, you know, pining after her father, who's apparently too busy to spend any time with her, so she hasn't seen him in forever. But yet he's able to get her on this USO tour somehow, I guess. So she has daddy issues. The character played by Alexis Knapp, her character has a baby. She doesn't know who the father is, though. So everybody has.
Well, you know what? I didn't know who their character was because I forgot all about her. So
I'm not even sure if she was in the second one or not. I know that she was in the first one. I don't remember her.
But
again, I brushed that one out of my mind so I may have just forgotten.
Yeah. No. But no, what was sweet about Pitch Perfect 1 is it had, you know, no expectations laid upon it. And it felt real in that Kendrick, played this Becca who was an outsider and she's kind of edgy and she wasn't perfect and blah, blah, blah. And these other girls all had issues, but they were kind of interesting because they were funny, too. And mm-hmm. and the singing was much less, having to be overblown. And, here's the thing with this movie. Okay, they're all, most of them out of college or struggling with their careers or finding mm-hmm. one. And who made all these costumes for them for the USO show? Right? Where did they come from? Were they airlifted from, overseas from Ivanka Trump's,
I
don't know.
They hand stitched them, themselves, in between scenes. When they weren't having a girls' night in, they were
right.
They were stitching their own uniforms.
You're right. And then say Amy, because of her father, she turns into this, Jackie Chan action hero.
Yeah, that was not good.
The whole segment with her doing, pretending sausages are nunchucks. I mean, what are we watching now?
It got off to a bad start. I mean, the whole thing starts with with the exploding yacht and Becca and Fat
right.
Amy jumping off it, Bruce Willis style. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? I was like, I guess they're going to explain it.
Really not satisfactory.
But I did like that they were able to make fun of itself. Because, there's the one time where the character's like, there has to be a competition. There has to be a competition. And, of course, there is a competition that emerges out of the U.S.
But there's not a competition because
it's not.
She flirts with the guy, Anna Kendrick-Becca.
Right.
And they win. She wins.
Right.
They don't even
right.
win. And then,
right. No, there really is no
competition. And then I didn't get into this in my review because there was enough to criticize. But, they try to do a rip-off, which is a common thing. And it came way earlier in this movie than the others, as you notice. And because they had to, they didn't have anything else to do. And they have themes. So they go, okay, songs by musicians you didn't know were Jewish, right?
Right.
And they
yeah.
do Lenny Kravitz, and then they do Call Me, and Chris Klein didn't write that. So it's like, it's all, if you take it apart, it doesn't even hold up. And then there's no competition, and those bands that they introduce, they're all freaking out because they get to use instruments like it's not pure. And it's like, what is this about?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, and I whispered this to our friend Nell Minow when we were watching, and I was like, at one point, the Bellas are doing their a cappella thing, and there's drums playing in the background. It was not.
Right. Well, that was
it
at
was
the
not
end
one
of
the girls.
Freedom.
It was not
right.
one. No, no, no. It was before that. It was before that.
Oh, it was before
and it
that.
Was, yeah, and it was not the girl beatboxing. And I was like, so what happened? I was like, are they just hoping we don't notice? Because I noticed.
Right.
Yeah. But I was like,
no, I just.
It's perfect. I don't care.
Yeah. This is a desperate stab to, do a trilogy and complete it and let everybody move on. But, I didn't even like Anna Kendrick in this. I mean, she was just sleeping, walking through it, I mean, she spent a whole lot of time with headphones on, not even reacting.
This was not a good showcase for the Becca character. I mean, and she really just seems to be, her character just mostly seems to be reacting to everybody else. Or it's either that or she's following behind the producer guy. And that was really all she had to do. There wasn't a whole lot of interacting between her and the other girls, which I think is disappointing.
DJ Khalid guy everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
what is
took a
his
shot every time
contribution
they
said
DJ Khalid
to entertainment?
I mean, I like DJ Khalid, but Jesus Christ, man. It was a 90-minute commercial for him, basically.
Right, I don't even know who he is, nor do I want to know.
Yeah, he's really famous, but still, the movie did not need to be built around him, and you getting to be the lead into DJ Khalid is like, why would he ever pick this one producer because she could hum a few bars over one of his beats?
Right.
I was like, that's the most ludicrous aspect of the final act to me, was like that she was up there at all. I was like, she didn't do anything. All she did was hum over one of his beats.
Now, did you know too that they shot everything in Atlanta and none of these locations were in Europe?
What? No.
It's true. Look at the press notes.
Yeah.
They're touting this. No, I'm telling you, they weren't in Europe. They found that casino they go to, that was in Atlanta. They just fixed it up different.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
The last one was the one where they went on the world tour. I hope they at least shot those there in those spots.
I didn't bother to do my due diligence and see what they're trying to do to us. But, it's not fun. I mean, if there's anything that has to be here, it's fun. And even the songs just seem rather willy-nilly that, I don't think their hearts were really into it. So I don't know. It's sad because, when I first watched Pitch Perfect, it was very endearing to me in many ways. And in this, even in the beginning, they both, her and Fat Amy, had boyfriends, and they go, oh, they're not here now, So they can find other guys to hang out with.
Exactly.
What a mess this was. It was a missed opportunity to at least do better than the second film, which was just, the kitchen sink way of doing everything and nothing.
The last one, when they started making this one, I was like, well, what's left for them to do? They just won the world championships. So I was like, what's left? So I was like, I knew this plot was going to be a mess, and of course it was. But I will say that if you're a fan of these characters in these movies, then I think it ends on a high note. I mean, I think that final act is really good. The montage at the end where they kind of go through some of this, the first couple of movies, I think is really sweet. So I think if you like these movies, it'll end on a high note.
So that means you have to sit through the whole thing to see something.
get there though. So.
Anyway. Well, that's all I have to say. I'm over the Pitch Perfect, franchise.
In a way, it's kind of sad to see the most popular all-female franchise kind of come to a close, though. Because there really isn't another one. I mean, Wonder Woman may be starting one, and maybe we'll get another one with Ocean's 11 next, or Ocean's 8 next year.
But we are seeing
one come to a close now, so.
Yeah. Well, Hunger Games we had for a while and stuff like that. Yeah. But, I think that era is over, thank God, because they weren't getting better.
I would say that, but Peter Jackson has Mortal Engines next year, so the YA is not gone yet.
Okay. Well, I know nothing about Mortal Engines and what's under the hood. So.
You will know about it soon enough. Trust me, because that's going to be all right, Susan. This has been great as always. Thank you
for having me. And this is a lovely way to spend the day before the big day. So
yes.
I appreciate it. And
I'll definitely have you on again.
Even better movies next year.
Yes, so. That means I will not be talking to you in January when they drop all the crap on us. But sometimes
that's just makes it fun to just get all your bad attitude out in January and then wait for the good stuff later.
Well, that's why I get out of town for a week to go to Sundance, because I can avoid a lot of the worst of it, and then I can come back.
There you go. No, that's where I spend a lot of time watching links of movies that other people will never see.
the worst thing I know, somebody was telling me the other day, they're like, well, here come the crap movies that we'll be screening next year. I was like, the worst movies are the ones that they send you links to that are coming out in January, because that's what I'm wading through right now.
The ones that I have one waiting for me right now to do for the first week of January. You're right. It's just lying in wait for my attention.
Exactly. That's what I've got to deal with for the next few days. So, anyway. All right, Susan, this has been great. We will talk again soon. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
And if I don't talk to you, have Merry Christmas, and I'll talk to you in 2018. All right. We've spent a lot of time, so now we are very near to the end of the show. So I'm going to have to breeze through this next break and then come back and give you my quick thoughts on the reaction to Star Wars and Bright and then Blu-rays. Then we got to get out of here. We're almost out of time. I'll be right back, y'all. Over the last week, I have been amazed at the number of people who have come up to me. And these are friends of mine, too, not just readers of PunchDrunkCritics.com, but my friends who've told me how much they don't really like Star Wars The Last Jedi. I found it to be amazing. You know, the Rotten Tomatoes score was not particularly high. Last time I checked, it was at 57%. It may have changed since then. We found out that that was mostly trolls. Bringing the score down, which I kind of knew, but still, even so, this movie has proven to be very divisive. Now, me personally, I think it's right up there with The Empire Strikes Back, and I love it for that reason. I didn't start off thinking that way, but I've now seen the movie 3 times, and yes, I do. I've come around to thinking yes, it is right up there with Empire Strikes Back in terms of what it does to the franchise, the risks it takes, the characters and some of their motivations and how they turn in unexpected ways. I love that aspect of it. I love what Rian Johnson was able to do. I think he masterfully plays with our expectations because, look, we were all expecting a certain thing. We were all expecting it to be like The Force Awakens, which basically gave us a new hope all over again with just a new character that wasn't Luke Skywalker. That's all it was. It was the same thing. Same setup. And we liked it for that. You know, we're happy with that nostalgia. The Last Jedi says, hey man, screw your nostalgia. And it does away with it. And now we don't know what's going to happen in episode 9. We have no clue. And for me, that is the most exciting thing. But I've been amazed by the reactions to it. And there's actual petitions out there to have The Last Jedi stricken from the Star Wars canon. I'm serious. That is a real thing that's out there right now. A real thing. They want it stricken from the canon. Of course, that's not going to happen. Lucasfilm approved it. The Lucasfilm story group came up with the story. Of course, that's not going to happen. But I hope that people will look at The Last Jedi in a few years and will see why it's genius. I hope they'll see why. I hope they'll see why it was necessary for Luke Skywalker to go the way he went. I hope they'll see why it was necessary for Snoke to go the way he went. I hope they'll see why I hope they'll see that why Leia was able to do what she was able to do. I've heard people complaining about that as well. I mean, I just hope they take a look at it and really think about it and realize how stale this franchise would be if this entire trilogy was just a rehash of the previous one. You know, we don't need to see that again. And I'm always blown away by people who are just so stuck in their nostalgia that they are unable to take anything that breaks away from that. And I think we're going to see maybe in a few years, this movie will be appreciated the way it deserves to be. But all I know is Rian Johnson, man, you did it for me, man. I can't wait to see what his trilogy is like. If it's as exciting as this one, as this single movie was, then I'm going to be stoked. I mean, look, I loved Rogue One also. You remember Rogue One was my number one movie of 2016. That movie took chances too. And I love the way they were able to do that. And as far as being a Star Wars fan, I am happier than a pig in mud right now with the last two movies that we've gotten. And I like The Force Awakens too. In fact, I like The Force Awakens now more than ever because of what happened in The Last Jedi. Because it set me up and then it knocked me right back down. So I'm looking forward to seeing the reactions change over the next few years. Just watch, because they will. Another movie that came out this week was Netflix's first legitimate blockbuster. This was Bright, the $90 million movie directed by David Ayer, reuniting him with his Suicide Squad star Will Smith. And Joel Edgerton is in it as well. Noomi Rapace, Lucy Fry, Ike Barinholtz. Great cast. And it's if you've seen any of David Ayer's previous cop movies, you know, like End of Watch or Harsh Times, Street Kings, things like that, then you probably had a good idea of what the movie is. Now, it's got corrupt cops and things like that. It's exactly what you think. A lot of racial tension. These are his movies. This is his wheelhouse. I think he brought a little bit of that to Suicide Squad as well. And Fury, which is his World War II movie, was about, you know, the common brotherhood of brothers in arms, and which is just so it's very similar to his cop movies in that regard. But he brings all of that into this movie. The only difference is that it's set in a fantasy version of America where humans live alongside orcs and elves and fairies, and the elves are basically the 1%, you know, and the orcs are minorities, you know, they're the downtrodden, and you know, and it finds Edgerton is the orc and Will Smith is a human cop, and they get caught up in a investigation involving a found magic wand. The magic wands are basically what they call nuclear bombs that grant wishes. They're the all-powerful objects that basically can do anything. And if you replace magic wand with suitcase full of cocaine or suitcase full of drug money, it is your basic David Ayer movie. I mean, it's more corrupt cops. It's more internal affairs divisions. It's FBI agents. It's everything you've ever seen. But the reaction to the movie has been really, really harsh, and I've been surprised by it. I mean, critics are just absolutely murdering this movie. Now, I gave it a fairly good grade. I gave it a 3 out of 5. I think it's a worthwhile film to see. Critics have been killing it, absolutely destroying it. With some calling it the worst movie of 2017, which to me is just absurd. And I feel like it's one of those cases where a movie that dares to take any kind of gamble at all is always going to get hammered if it doesn't suit the person writing about it. Now, in this case, Bright, awkwardly in some cases, kind of it makes an allegory to prejudice and racial tension today. And you know, when you're doing that using species rather than race, it's not going to be perfect. But like I said before, that's only a small part of it. The rest of it is just your basic cop movie with the usual buddy cop dynamic that we've seen a million times before in a million different movies that we all tend to like. Even critics, we all tend to like those movies, even if they aren't, you know, even if they aren't particularly ambitious. I don't feel like this movie's ambitious at all. I feel like its aims are fairly middle of the road, which is why I was able to give it a 3 out of 5, because if it had tried to do too much more, I would have been like, yeah, it swings and misses, you know, it really swings and misses, but it doesn't really swing all that hard. It's kind of like a Czech single. It's kind of like a Czech single. It's not really trying to be ambitious. Yeah, it has this, you know, this, the outward dressing is looks like something out of Warcraft or Lord of the Rings, and that's great. But once the story kicks in, none of that stuff really matters, and none of that stuff matters. So I think critics are being way too hard on Bright. I really do. I think the movie is going to do extremely well for the people who watch it, other than critics. Looking at his Rotten Tomatoes score right now, critics have given it a 30%. That, you know, it's got 16 fresh reviews out of 54. I am one of those 16. But on the audience score, of which there are 6,687, have given it a 90%. So people who watch it love it. And I think that's why Netflix was so quick to greenlight a sequel. A sequel is already in the works for Bright. And I'm not surprised. I won't be surprised if in the next few days we'll hear that Bright is their most watched movie in a first weekend ever. I will almost guarantee it. Just look for that. And when that happens, I will post it on punchdrunkcritics.com. All right, real quick, I'm going to go through the Blu-rays, and then we got to get out of here. The show is almost over, y'all. This is for December 26th, the day after Christmas. You would think they would stockpile all these movies for the week before Christmas, but no, they didn't. Last week was fairly light. This week, big stuff. Jeepers Creepers 3 is coming out on Blu-ray. I did see 2, but it's been a lot of years between these, and I don't know if I'd still be into this franchise or not. In fact, I heard there was something up with the director, like something criminal. But I don't want to say more because I can't remember exactly what it is, and it wouldn't be right for me to say it. But Jeepers Creepers 3 is coming out on Tuesday. The Mountain Between Us, this is the romantic thriller, this romantic survival thriller starring Kate Winslet and Idris Elba. I think it's fairly generic. There are a couple laughable parts to it. but The Mountain Between Us, I guess you're in the mood for something that's swooningly passionate. The Mountain Between Us is good enough for you. Best movie of the week by far, Brawl in Cell Block 99. This is the new film from S. Craig Zahler, the guy who gave us Bone Tomahawk a couple years ago. Brawl in Cell Block 99 is insane. It stars Vince Vaughn, like you've never seen him before, as a guy who gets whose girl is kidnapped, and he gets thrown into jail, and the only way to get out is to basically kill somebody in Cell Block 99. He's got to go through a whole army of goons to do it. It is violent. It is funny. It is brutal. Definitely go check out Brawl in Cell Block 99 if you get a chance. It is an amazing movie. Terminator 2 Judgment Day is coming out on 4K. Yes, I want it. Killing Gunther. This is the comedy, action comedy starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, in which a bunch of mercenaries, a lot of them played by SNL vets, go off and try to kill Gunther, who is this mysterious, amazing hitman played by Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger is not in the movie a lot. He's in the movie for maybe about 20 minutes. They're the best 20 minutes of the movie. It is Arnold Schwarzenegger unhinged. He is going wild in this film. You can look at my review for Killing Gunther on PunchDrunkCritics.com, but I'm just going to tell you, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the best part about it. Check that out. The Flatliners remake with Ellen Page and Diego Luna, that comes out as well. I never did see it. And Mayhem, the office horror starring Stevie Yeun, in which everybody has to kill one another. Yep. All the office workers have to kill one another. That's what Mayhem's about. You can go and check that one out. And I was a little bit disappointed in that one. All right, so next week, before I get out of here, next week is the top 10 of 2017. So tune in for that. I've got to get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Cinema Royale. Thank you, Susan Wolzina of RogerEbert.com, for calling in and talking Pitch Perfect 3 and The Post with me. Thank you, all of you who check us out on Blog Talk Radio as part of the Critical Movie Critics Network. I will see you guys next week for my end of the year wrap up. Thanks again. Merry Christmas.